Hey, this is Daniel from Corpus Christi, Texas, and I just listened to the first episode with Father Parrish when you were talking about some of your conversations with God and being intimate, and you compared it to conversations between a husband and a wife. I think that is very beautiful. I've been married 5 years, and that example resonated much with me. And also, when I actually spent a time in seminary as well and had a Franciscan friar as my spiritual director, and he would talk about our relationship with God as a loving relationship, and it's just a beautiful example. It's a beautiful way of expressing it, and it touched me very deeply, and I just had to share that. I hope you all have great luck with this podcast, and I look forward to the next episode. And God bless from Corpus Christi, Texas.
Thanks, Daniel, for sharing how the threshold impacted you. Any of you guys who have any messages or anything you want to share with us, please just check out thresholdpodcast.fm and click on the contact pad. We'd love to have you share any of the stories that you have, anything that connects or resonates with you from the threshold, and we'll be sharing some of those on air each week. Thanks to Sue, Sherry, Michael, Amorette, and everybody else who gave us feedback on our first few episodes. Hope you guys enjoy this upcoming story from Emily Britt. In a time when religious conversations can seem tense or even taboo, I sit down each week with a different guest to talk about their beliefs, what shaped those beliefs, and why they really matter. My name's Tony Vicenda, and this is The Threshold. This week on The Threshold, I sit down with Emily Britt. Emily is a mother of three, Game of Thrones fans, and a universalist Christian. I really enjoyed sitting down with Emily, and I think you'll see why as we get into her story about her struggles with multiple sclerosis and how her faith was formed through a move to Iowa. Please join Emily and I as we talk about what really matters. Emily, how are you doing today?
Doing pretty great, thanks.
Emily, I want to thank you for joining us today. Like I was telling you before I hit record, you were supposed to be my third or fourth podcast, but you're actually ending up being my first interview. And I don't know exactly what order we'll release them in yet, but if I seem a little bit nervous or if you're listening out there and we seem to be figuring things out a little bit, please bear with us. Thank you so much for coming on. I was really blown away by your enthusiasm and excitement when Elise tagged you in the post on Facebook. And I'm really excited to kind of cross this threshold with you today and talk about this thing that we don't always talk about, which is what people believe. And that's going to be a pretty early question. But before we get into that, would you do me a favor, just kind of tell people who you are, where you're at, you know, let them know generally kind of who you where what type of person you are.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited. Like genuinely excited, not just like weird excited. Like this is something I'm very passionate about. In college, I kind of was like, what do I want to do? And the thing that kept coming up was I want to talk to people, but I was like, okay, can't really have like a degree in talking to people. And so, I've just been working on the last like 13 years of my life and just talking to people, and more recently listening. I'm trying to also work on my listening skills. So I am Emily Britt. I live in Dallas, Texas. I am about to celebrate my 13th wedding anniversary.
Congratulations.
My husband, Jeremy, thank you so much. And then I'm also about to celebrate my oldest daughter's 12th birthday tomorrow. So, yeah. And then I have three daughters altogether. I have an almost 12-year-old, a 7-year-old, and a 3.5-year-old.
Awesome. That's a great spread.
Yeah. And they're all girls. So for anybody who is into Game of Thrones, I like to call myself the mother of dragons. Because that's how I feel sometimes. And so it's really empowering and it's really terrifying, all of it. And so I, let's see, So it's actually like interesting to me, like especially this topic, because when I met my husband, I grew up going to church. Like I've always been in church. I'm in Texas. That's what you do. And I didn't really think anything of it. And then I met my husband, and he was like diehard Southern Baptist.
Mm.
And so that kicked it up like a million notches for me. And it was great because I did feel like there were things about it that were like answering some of those like deep longing questions that you kind of have. Like, why do I exist? And what is there? And all of these things. I felt like it really answered and addressed some of those things.
Before we dive into some of those questions, tell me a little bit more about kind of your family of origin. So were you said you grew up kind of in the church, going to church. Tell me about your parents. Were they religious? What was their religious background? How did that maybe impact you a little bit?
Okay. So I'm actually the youngest of four. And my oldest sibling, my sister, she is actually 18 years older than I am. And then the next one is 16 years older than I am. And the next one is 14 years older than I am. Okay. So I was like way an afterthought. And I always refer to myself as an only child with siblings and I was basically their grandchild, like, because they were just significantly older, I loved it. I always thought that was really awesome. But yeah, so coming up in the church, like my parents were like super involved. My mom was the fellowship coordinator for the whole church. And my dad was like the music director, and he led worship music. But I was part of the Disciples of Christ Church, okay. Which is actually, it's like a low country church with high church standards,
right,
or something.
Right.
So a lot of liturgy and robes and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But my dad is very spiritual, but he's very emotional.
Okay.
So it's a lot of like love and compassion and love your neighbors and do for others and those kinds of things, which I am so grateful that is a part of my being. Like, I'm so thankful for that. My mom is not terribly spiritual at all. And as I've gotten older, I'm like, oh, it was for like the social. It was more of a social aspect of things, like for her.
Do you think your dad's deep spirituality kind of played a role in your mom's involvement in the church at all? Was there any of that part of it?
I don't know. I don't know that I would. I mean, they were just also just like, you go to church. And so since you're in church, these are the things you do. And my mom is just naturally creative and naturally social. And my dad is very naturally, he's a people connector. Like, those are natural things for them. Like, okay. And so, yeah, I don't know that my dad's spirituality, like, because he was also raised Southern Baptist. My mom was raised Methodist. And so I don't know. And then they became Disciples of Christ. And so it's not like, I don't know really how their spirituality is really weird. My mom doesn't talk about it. Like, you don't need to talk about your prayers and you don't need to talk about your spiritual thoughts really.
Yeah.
And like growing up, like once I started kind of getting into that, she was always like, oh, we just got to keep that to ourselves.
Really amazing. So your parents came from two different denominational backgrounds and kind of ended up as Disciples of Christ. And you have these older siblings. And so do you think they had the same kind of experience of religiosity as you did? Was your perception, you know, or even thinking back, is your perception now that you guys all had pretty much a consistent experience of what it meant to grow up in a Christian church?
No, like I would, like my, of all my siblings, I'm the one that's still pretty like spiritual or like believes in something and like lives by something. They are all very just like, I'm just living, and none of them go to church. And like, basically once they got to college age, I mean, just church was done. Like, and one of them, like once he had kids, they went to church all the time. But then once those kids got older and in high school even they dropped, I mean, they were done. So it wasn't ever really like nothing more than a thing that you do. Like, and I mean, in my opinion, like in our interaction, even like, I don't have spiritual conversations at all. Like my sister and I do now, like she's older and, she's more like new agey. But like they didn't, their church experience is very different from mine. I feel like they didn't really go to like the camps and they didn't go to anything like that. Like I did, I went to all the camps and I went to all the vacation Bible schools and I was very involved in these groups.
Did you pursue that or was that something your parents encouraged you to do or was it kind of a mix?
It was kind of a mix. It was kind of like, that was also my, like, this is what you do. So I also, I mean, because I wasn't with my siblings at that age, like just kind of assumed like, oh, we all, this is something we do. But in talking to them as we've gotten older, I'm like, oh, okay. Like, we just, I mean, we had very different childhoods. Like, so they were all, and my cousins, and they're all the same age. So, like, they did a lot of family vacations and trips and family camp, like cousin camp kind of thing. But, like, where I did, my cousins that are my age, I don't have cousins really that are my age. So we didn't really.
Yeah, church was kind of your experience of family growing up. That's that kind of, they had the actual family center experience. And then you have the church as family experience, it sounds like.
Yeah.
So you mentioned college is kind of this transition point for both you and your siblings. And you talked a little bit at the beginning about how your husband, his faith, as you guys kind of started interacting, answered these questions that kind of arose in you in college. What were some of those questions that you were struggling with that, the Southern Baptist denomination or his experience of faith kind of answered for you? What were just some of those things maybe that you were wrestling with?
Well, kind of value and role as a person. Like that was something that I always really struggled with. Like, I guess even like, it's because of that whole, like how the differences of how I was raised and the family I was raised in and seeing like something so different in them and wondering, I never really understood why it was so different for me. I felt like before I met him, I was just kind of a like roaming person. And when I met him, I kind of felt like, oh, okay. He thinks about these really deep things that are inside that I think about, like, why am I here? And what's the point of all of this? Like, and I want to do these big things, but like, I don't feel like I can, or, which are, you know, questions that I ask over and over again. And he's still very helpful and guiding, but that was kind of the thing. He came along and it was more of a guidance that I didn't have. And the guidance was, I mean, the answers were very like, okay, well, God has this plan and like, God made all of these things and God made you. And so it was kind of, it felt really fulfilling.
That's great. Let me ask you a question. So if you had to, if somebody came up to you on the street and just said, you know, in about a minute, tell me what you believe, how would you answer that question?
Today, like, I would say, I believe that there's a universe that exists and I exist in the universe just as much as anyone else around me. And that each person has value, and it's up to all of us to seek that value in ourselves and affirm that value in other people and each other. And I believe that that's why we're here.
And then let me ask you a different question, a slightly different one. If somebody came up and asked you what religion you are, how would you answer that question?
I would say, I've been really like, I don't know how to define it or give it a term, because I'm okay with saying God exists. I'm okay with saying that Jesus exists and walks the earth. Like, but I also don't want to limit and say that if someone calls that the universe, that's wrong. So So I don't really have like a label for it exactly. I mean, I could say universalist, but I think there's stuff that gets wrapped up with that too that I'm like maybe not.
So let me ask a question. So you talked a lot about, you know, like finding value in that and naming value in others. So what brings value and meaning into your life? So what are things in your current space, in your current place, that give you a sense of purpose or value?
Well, so right now it's that if I have an idea in my mind of something that I want to accomplish, that I can accomplish, or something like that, and being okay to like take the step and do it, like this, like I mean 2 years ago, had you emailed me and said or put a thing out about wanting someone to interview for a podcast, I'd have been like, oh man, that sounds so cool, I wish I could, that's something that I could do. I would have never made the next step of like just being like, okay, I'm just going to contact you and say me. Where now I am like, it's out there. I mean, you are honestly asking that, and I honestly am excited about it. So,
you said 2 years ago you would not have you wouldn't have answered that or responded to it. You would have been excited about it or liked the idea of it. Has something changed in the last 2 years specifically that has caused that kind of conversion or change in yourself, or is it just kind of a slow evolution?
It's a lot of therapy and like addressing just kind of my life issues and trauma, and just like saying, you know, I am a person, like, and I have value, and not just saying that anymore, like. Because also I want to tell other people that, and I don't feel like I would have the right to tell anyone else that if I don't believe that for myself too.
It sounds like you have kind of and this is, I mean, these conversations get pretty deep pretty quick. So I just want to, if I'm off base here, feel free to let me know. But it sounds like you kind of have this wound somewhere around kind of your own personal worth that you had an experience of not necessarily feeling with that.
Oh, yeah.
Does that come from a certain place, or is that something that has just kind of always been a background struggle?
There have been. So I think earlier when there are trauma things that happened at a time that I couldn't have said it, I'm doing this because I don't feel valuable. Like, but it was just kind of a natural response to feeling that way inside, like, even though I hadn't addressed it as that. I mean, I didn't have those words. Like when I was 12, I didn't have those words to say to myself. Right. It was just like, oh, well, you do bad things, so this must be who you are. Like, or you constantly draw this attention or these people. That just is who you are, like, and that's just what you do, like, and it was very harmful. Like, that was really harmful for a really long time. Like, I didn't think I was, I mean, it definitely created this feeling of not being a valuable person.
If you and value, I think, you know, and I try not to talk about what I think during these things, but I think, you know, value is something that is inherent. But if you had to kind of name, you know, a gift you had, or, you know, something that you know that you have to offer people beyond just what you've already described, you know, the desire to share with them that they're valuable, which I think is beautiful and wonderful and something that I certainly want people to do. I'm a youth worker and work in a church because I want people to experience a sense of their own value and their own goodness. But if you had to name for yourself kind of a giftedness or a strength or something that you know comes from that value or contributes to that value, what's something that you would name?
So just like my dad, I am a person that, like, I want to connect people to each other. And I want to listen well enough to people to know who they are, like, so that I can appropriately talk to them. Like, and I, like, because I think that when people feel like they're listened to or heard or cared for, like, it makes everything better. Like, so I think I'm an empath.
Okay.
So I feel everyone's mm-hmm. feelings. I feel everything that everyone feels. And that has been really hard, like, in a lot of, I mean, that has been hard in my life, but it's not something that I can turn off. And now I've learned to appreciate that. And I don't want to turn it off because I think it's something that is needed in the world. And I get to have that. Like, I get to be that. I can't solve things for everybody and I can't fix anybody. But I also know that, like, not everybody, just because people have feelings doesn't mean they have to be fixed. Like, they just need to, like, know that they're heard and have somebody come alongside of them to feel their feelings.
I mean, the shouldering that burden, being in the mess with somebody. I mean, like, lots of times we think about, the desire to solve something for somebody else. But the reality is the thing that they're experiencing, for good or for bad, oftentimes is doing something in them that is beneficial. Or if they have somebody who comes alongside it and helps them shoulder that burden, can be really beneficial. And I love hearing you kind of share that. And I my friend, Father Colin, who after you and I talk, he and I are going to sit down and he'll listen to your interview and then we're going to talk about it. So look forward to that. He shares this quote by, I think, Walker Percy, which he shares a lot of Walker Percy quotes. But if all of your problems were solved at 3 p.m. tomorrow, what would you do at 4 p.m.? And most people are so unaware of what that would be. I mean, there's a reality that we think about our problems as something of other, but there's an intrinsic nature to how they are our life. Like, our problems, our joys, our sufferings, our sorrows.
Right.
And to hear you just saying, like, I want to be in other people's lives and I want to be present to them. That's so rare in today's society. We see so much of other people's lives, but we don't always get a chance to directly engage. Tell me, do you pray? Like, are you a person of prayer? Is that something that you take time to do?
Yeah, I would say that. Like, I love prayers. Like, I love like the Book of Common Prayer. I love reading that and knowing about prayer. And I feel like it's a natural thing that happens. I used to feel like, oh, I have to define, I don't want to do it because I feel like I'm forcing something or not being genuine. And I don't know who I'm directing this to, but that has changed a lot. And especially very recently, I have a lot of life changes that I'm trying to pursue. But I want to be very, I'm very good at, like, committing myself to things that I don't care about, like, that I don't wholeheartedly, like, won't quit just because it gets difficult. I'm a quitter. Like, but I'm tired of being a quitter. And so I've been, like, doing a lot of work on, like, okay, what is it that I really care about and why? And so just that I pray about that. Like, I just ask to be very aware and attentive to the people that are coming into my life, the things that people are saying around me. And it's also been like, I'm also trying to be accepting of people complimenting me or even criticizing. Like, criticism is very difficult. Like, but I know it's a necessary thing to know about yourself. Like, but it's not always, criticism isn't always like stone truth either. Like, it's somebody's opinion, else's opinion outside of your body. Like,
but it sounds like a lot of mindfulness. It sounds like a lot of just kind of being aware and attentive to what's around you is a really intentional act, and seeking that out and in kind of contemplative awareness. It sounds like a lot of what you're doing. You said something just a second ago that I really kind of would love to follow up on. You know, you said you kind of struggled with the question of who are you directing it to? And I know that earlier, you know, you kind of talked about being a little bit of a universalist and being like, the universe exists, I exist in it, you know, I'm not a nihilist. When you pray, do you ever have moments where you know who you're directing it to, or who do you feel like you're directing it to?
So there have been times that I'm trying not to be scared of this, where I say, okay, God, I want you to be there. Like I want to be talking to you. Like, because I want it to be God, ruler of the universe. Like, that's what I want. That's who I want to be talking to. And that's who I want to believe is there. Like that is, I believe that, and I'm like, I hate even saying like, I want to say God, if God exists, because I'm not that person really. Like, it's not that I don't believe God doesn't exist at all. Like, but I don't know, the wording has changed for me so much that I don't know how to say it. But like, there's a lot of times where I'm like, God, I want you to be there. Like, I want it to be you that I'm talking to you. I don't want like nameless universe. I don't want lack of personality, compassion universe, something like that. I don't want anything empty. I want full bodied God, creator of the universe. Like, that, when I say I believe in God, that's what I believe in, is God. Awesome. Like, but I don't, and I'm not a, God is the trees. I'm not that.
Right.
Like, I mean, I think God created the trees, and I think, but like, and I think there's power and energy in the trees, but I think God created the energy in the trees. Like,
the trees may tell us something about God, but they are not God, right? Like, the trees may be connected to the divine nature, but they are not the divine nature, right? But you still desire.
Exactly.
Yeah. You still desire that divine nature to kind of, for lack of a better term, like, put on flesh, right? To be present and personal in a certain way. If somebody asked you if you thought a personal relationship with Jesus or with God or with some deity was possible, it sounds like that's something you want to believe, but if you kind of look in your heart, I mean, like, where do you struggle with that, or where does that affirm you?
It affirms me in that, what I'm seeking for what I want to do in the world. Like, because I believe that the only reason that I can even offer, a genuine relationship with another person is because this God of the universe has given that to me, and through a personal relationship. Like, and it's so hard, because I'm like, I just feel like that those words and phrases have lost so much and become so cheesy, but I'm like, I don't know how to say that, but like, that's what I want to say. Like, I do believe that, but I also, for someone who has never heard those words or had those words to use, I don't want to say it's impossible.
Yeah, it's awesome. I mean, one of the reasons I moved to Seattle was kind of a weariness of the fact that everybody talked about a personal relationship with God, but very few people actually seemed to have care or concern about that, you know, in the North DFW area. I know that's not unique to there or to any specific creed of people, but it's something that, you know, going to a place where skepticism reigned a little bit more actually created a sense of kind of like honesty that was refreshing and hopeful. That's part of why I'm really excited about these conversations, because everybody approaches that a little bit differently, and we're forced to kind of refine that. Let me ask you kind of a really intentional question. And so you talk about being given that that capacity by God to be in relationship with each other, and that desire to be in a relationship. Do you feel like there's a moment that you've experienced that in your life in a really deep and intense way?
Okay, yes. So in 2010, I was diagnosed with MS. And this was like, my second daughter was 11 months old, and everything was going really great. And then suddenly, it wasn't. Like, I couldn't see, I couldn't stand, I couldn't move. I couldn't drive. I couldn't function. Like, and then I got this diagnosis that I had relapsing remitting MS. And the only person I knew at the time that had MS was my husband's uncle, who, like, I met him, I was told he had MS, and he died, like, 2 months later. So I was like, crap, you know, I'm going to die. Like, which now I know, like, that's not how it works. But I remember laying in my bed, and I had been there for, like, 4 days. Like, I had just been laying on the bed and sleeping. I couldn't watch TV because it made me dizzy. I couldn't listen to anything because it hurt my head. So I had to lay in, like, the complete darkness of my room by myself. And I remember praying and just being like, what am I going to do? Like, this is, I have children. Like, I have a young marriage. Like, what is happening? And I remember feeling, and I mean, at the time I would say I heard a voice, but it's like, and I'm like, that sounds so crazy. But it was just like, everything is going to be fine. Like, I am going to take care of you. And I believed it. Like, I didn't, I was like, my husband's going to leave me because I'm going to die. And he's going to have to, I mean, he's not going to want to watch me die. And like my kids, I mean, it was dark. Like it was, those are some of the scariest thoughts I've had. Like, I mean, and I was like, okay, I have to be okay with that. Like, I have to be okay that he's going to want to leave and he's going to want to remarry and I'll just never see. I mean, a lot of dark stuff. And there was this, moment of just like, no, yes, you have this thing. You have a sick body. Like, but you know that you have a sick body.
Yeah.
And you know that I'm bigger than that. And I will continue to be bigger than that. And it was just like, you know, and that was 8 years ago or 7 years ago. And I mean, it's great. Like, but it's also kind of becoming the thing that's still pushing me of like, I can continue to lay in a dark room and withdraw and I can do that and just accept the fate. Like, but like, I don't want to. I think that I do have something unique. I think I have a unique gift for this time in history in the world where we are right now. And I don't want to waste it. I don't want to do that.
That's beautiful. You talked earlier about, you know, one of your primary gifts or values, you know, being able to kind of enter into other people's, you know, reality, their space, their mess. And I think, you know, there's a real sense of that coming from a place of, you know, your experience of having, you know, God, you know, come into yours. And that sounds beautiful and amazing. And, you know, as somebody who's had, you know, different but similar experiences, I know it's always, you know, one of those things that people are kind of like, but is that real? But I think one of the beautiful things is that for you, you know, that was a life-changing moment. That's something that has given you the strength to go forward for the last, you know, 8 years and not just sit in a dark room. And so, you know, whether somebody believes that's real or not, there's a deep reality to it that is, it's amazing and inspiring. Do you think that moment clarified that desire to enter into other people's kind of mess and reality for you? Was that something that was on your heart before that point? Or is that something that you think really stems in part from that experience?
It didn't at the time. Like, that at the time was literally just for me to get through. Like that's really what that moment ended up being for me. It was just like, okay, like that was what got me through day to day and like year to year for like 5 years of a lot of decisions that I had to make and things like that with my health and with my family and I mean, because obviously then I'm like, okay, so I've had all these like fears of my husband leaving me and my children, I'm not being able to raise my children. So, okay. And now that God, you've given me this saying like that you're going to take care of, how do I go forward now with those fears that I have? Yeah. Like, I can't just push those fears back because you've said you're going to take care of me. Like, I need to deal with those fears. Where are those coming from? Do I really need to worry about those things? Like, and so I mean, the clarity, the clarification point kind of came. We moved to Iowa in 2012, and Iowa City is a very liberal mm-hmm. place. And I'd never been around that many liberals in my life ever.
Yeah.
it was like you said, like refreshing, but it also came as like a teaching time to like put my questions and thoughts to the test. And like, I redefined a lot of things for myself at that time or during those years that have now carried me on into that. We've moved back to Dallas and now here we are post being liberals in a very conservative land, you know, like that. And I can't just go back to the way I was. And so now it's deepened in the fact that now I'm like, okay, now I have to be okay to have these relationships and affirm people that I don't agree yeah. with. Like, and that don't, that think I'm crazy, like, you know, or whatever, because I'm totally different than I yeah. was. But I dealt with that in Iowa too, of like, I mean, I was then in I'd gotten in a book club and it was all these women and they weren't church mm-hmm. women. Like that was so strange. Like, I'm like, oh, this is weird. This is weird that this is not a Bible study. Like this is like an actual like book that we're reading and it's got cuss words in it. And like everyone's like openly cussing in it together as a group of women. Like, this is strange. Like, but I was like, this is amazing. Like, this is real. This is reality.
Yeah.
Like, but then there was also still the like, okay, but like, I don't know how to explain my point of view to them. Cause these are not churched people at all, but I'm also not seeking to evangelize them. Like those are all brand new. I mean, those were new experiences for me.
Yeah. No, those can be huge and transformational experiences. And it's really interesting to, at least in my experience going from Dallas to Seattle, how immediately I became in the eyes of everyone I knew an extreme liberal just because I happened to live in Seattle, even though,
yeah.
like, I mean, within 6 months of being here, but it was like, oh, like I would say the same things, do the same things, be the same person. Oh, that's so liberal, right? Whereas if I, when I was in Texas, people who were in a different location was like, oh, you're just so conservative. It didn't matter what I was saying. It was almost the perception of the place. And kind of when you find right. yourself trying to be who you really are, or figure out who you really are in the middle of that, or being able to be who you really are for the first time, I think that kind of bumps up against people and they tend to assign a perception based on what that is. And we tend to assign perceptions based on, you know, oh, yeah. kind of what our experience is. And so I have kind of two questions, and I don't know that we have time for both of them. So I'd love to kind of toss them out to you and then let you pick which route we go down, even though I know they'd both be fun. And one is kind of how your faith and your family life, as far as your children and your husband, interact with each other. And the other one is about Jesus and the fact that you have kind of mentioned him. But, you know, we talked a lot about God abstractly. And so which of those two routes of questioning do you feel like would be more fun to go down?
Well, so like, I think that answering about Jesus kind of answers about Jesus and the other question.
Okay.
Also. So earlier we were talking about something and it, like, so the church we used to be in before we moved to Iowa is very, I don't know all the words. Like, they would preach line by line of the Bible, and the pastor made things very like, Jesus is the answer. Mm-hmm. So like, we had to do a lot of exercises of like, real time, real life, how is Jesus the answer? So that he did a really good job of making people a group of people that were all over the place, that like, fully church background, no church background, everything between. He did a good job of teaching us like, how to be a real person and how to deal with Jesus. Mm-hmm. And so like, there's we would go after our church met on Saturdays, and we would go to Waffle House afterwards every Saturday. And
that's a good church. I just want to say that's a good church. And it's a good post church activity, going to Waffle House afterwards. There's no Waffle Houses in Seattle. It's one of the great failings of the Northwest is no Waffle Houses.
Well, and the Midwest. Well, not, I guess there's stuff in Missouri, but Iowa, we didn't have Waffle House either. Yeah. And I was like, come on. Like, and nobody knew what grits were really. And I was like, I need grits.
Oh, that's okay. That's okay with me. I don't need anybody to know what grits are. So you guys went to Waffle House after church.
Great. We went to Waffle House after church, and we have this waitress named Mickey. And she, like, there was just something that ended up happening. Like, we ended up, the first time we went, there was like four of us and our kids that went, and we were just drawn to her, and she was drawn to us. And then we started going like all the time. But like 4 weeks in a row, we would fill out the Waffle House every time. And we weren't like walking in and giving her tracts. We weren't walking in and explaining to her the sermons or anything. We were living our life with this waitress and letting her live her life with us. And it was the most amazing thing. And I remember talking to my pastor about it, because I was just like, this is this amazing thing that's happening. What is this? And he goes, you know how Jesus went to the well and he sat with the woman at the well? He goes, that's what y'all are doing. Mm-hmm. Like, you are sitting in the grease with this woman. Like, he sat in the dirt and y'all are sitting in the grease, and you're not telling her how to get out of the grease necessarily. And you're not telling her that being in the grease is like the worst thing in her life. Like, you are affirming who she is, and you're being there with her in the grease. And I mean, she had great, like, and I mean, she was like, Waffle House was her second job to being a stripper. And you know, and we weren't like appalled by her sharing that with us, and like, weren't covering our kids' ears when she would talk about it. And because she was a person, she was becoming a part of our family. And when we moved to Iowa, she was like devastated. Like, she was so upset, because she's like, what am I going to do without you guys? And like, you know, like, that was kind of another thing, is like, he always talked about like, Jesus was a person that if you took Jesus out, there was a hole there. And so we wanted to be a people that like we're a part of the hole. And like, if you took us out, there would be a hole there.
Right.
And like, we want to, and that's who Jesus is to me. Like, Jesus is a person that wanted to show being a person that was, I mean, what humanity should be like, and not like a crispy, clean, squeaky dude. Like, I don't know. Like, he's not fluffy. He's not, he's a, like, I mean, I believe that, you know, I don't know. I mean, I say I believe, like, I don't know. I couldn't stand up to historical documents that other people might present to me to prove me wrong, or I don't know that I could do any of that. But like, then I'm not trying to do that. Like, that's not my goal. I'm trying to see what I feel like he has exemplified. And that was like full compassion, like full love and care. And I mean, value, like,
And as like Jesus got in the dirt and the darkness, right? Like you just got in the grease and you want to kind of live that out. And so is that something you're trying to model to your kids? Can you give me is it just bringing your kids along in that? I mean, how do you unpack that with your kids? I know a lot of people always ask me, you know, like, are you guys just indoctrinating your kids in the faith? Do they really have a choice, you know, as Catholics and as a church worker, man, it's a real challenge. It's a real question. So, I mean, you know, how do you engage your kids in those dialogues, or what are you trying to do to help them understand what mom and dad believe?
So that's the other thing. My husband, when we moved to Iowa, he was like, that's it. I'm an atheist. So like we moved and he like pulled the rug right out and was like, I'm done. Like, and I mean, his dad's an evangelist. He has gone to church his whole life. And we went to church our whole married lives and all this kind of stuff. And we moved and he's like, I'm done. I'm not going to do it anymore. I don't believe in any of this. Mm. And so so we have three girls and they are all representative of the three different phases of our life.
Okay.
Like our first one was like, I mean, we had her doing scripture memory at age 2. Like she could recite scripture, the ABCs of scripture memorization, like at 2, like pretty well. And like, that was like, we were like, oh, she did it. Like she knows, she loves the Lord, like all of those things. Our middle daughter, like we were in Iowa and I was taking them to church by myself for the most part. And, but we didn't do evening Bible stories, but I sing hymns to them. Like I've always sung hymns to them at night. And then now our third daughter, we've moved back. She doesn't even really know what church is at all. Mm. Like she's never, I mean, she recently went to a vacation Bible school at my parents' church. So, I mean, that has been her experience in church. So our main thing that we're just like, we are trying like, okay, compassion, care for others, like love for people that you don't necessarily understand or know where they're coming from. Always trying to find out where they're coming from and like never leave people alone. Like, like alone, not pestering, like alone,
right.
Like
right. No,
I got solitude.
You.
And so that's kind of, I mean, that's kind of our biggest takeaway, I feel like. And my husband now is like, okay, I will be honest with our kids. I'm not against them learning about Jesus, God, scriptures, church, religion, any of the things, whatever they learn about, like whatever they hear about, I want them to know about it. And I want to do my best to educate honestly. And like, I think even now for him, it's like, there are things that he believes in that could be classified as Christian, but he does not want to call it that at all.
Yeah.
Like, he does not want to be tied to any label. And so that's kind of like, and my oldest, she's very compassionate, but she also picks up on his like atheism and is very interested in that. And where at that age, he was not allowed to think or ask those questions. And we're just trying to be a family that you can ask those questions. And you're not going to be chastised or anything like that if you ask real questions. Like, no matter your age, no matter what we feel like you might understand or not. I mean, our kids have gone above and beyond in proving that they understand more than we give them credit for.
Yeah. Awesome.
I mean, my middle daughter, she's like, Mom, what happens when you die? And I was like, oh, I don't know, like, how to answer this. Like, you know, with Christianity, like if you know Jesus, you go to heaven and it's this beautiful place. And I like all of that. She's like, I think we just become clouds. And I'm like, you know, I'm gonna let you have that. Like, and have that. Like, because I don't feel the need to like tell her the way she thinks is wrong.
Right.
And not in a, I mean, it's probably, I don't know, that might be hippie and weird and I don't know, like, I don't know what it is.
Right.
I don't know what exactly my rules are for parenting.
That's all right.
And I'm kind of okay with that. Like, I want to live a real life with my family.
Hmm. It's beautiful.
So.
Awesome. Thank you so much for this conversation. I want to just kind of offer two things as we close out. One is that I just always kind of invite that if you have a question you'd like to ask me, like, you're welcome to. If not, that's okay. I don't need to talk. And then after that, I'd love to provide the opportunity to pray with you if you're open to that. If not, then that's okay. We'll skip that also. So do you have any questions that you'd question that you'd like to ask?
Not that I can think of right away.
That's okay.
Not that I can think of.
That's okay. This is your only chance, though. I'll never give you the opportunity again. No, that's totally all right. I feel bad because I end up, you know, I'm taking in a whole lot and I'm receiving a whole lot. And then to not offer in return seems selfish. I probably should prep people for that a little bit more.
Yeah, future. I appreciate that.
Yeah. And then would you be open to me praying with you?
Oh, absolutely.
Awesome. All right. God of the universe, we just place ourselves more deeply into your presence, and we thank you for the gift to just have open and honest conversations. I thank you for Emily, just for her willingness to come on, to be a part of this conversation, and I just ask your blessing on her to help her know that you're present to her, to give her a sense of consolation, and we thank you for the value and goodness that she brings into those that she's in community with. Thank you for openness, God, and we always ask you for a deeper sense of clarity and understanding. Amen.
Amen. Thank you so much.
If you'd like to connect a little bit more with Emily, I'd encourage you to check out her new and upcoming blogging and podcasting platform, Sometimes I Ramble on Facebook. She's going to have a lot more content coming out in spring of 2018, and I know I can't wait to check it all out. There's a link to that in the show notes. We'll be back in just 1 second for my conversation with Father Parrish about what we took away from my interview with Emily. So each week on The Threshold, after I sit down for my conversation with our guest, I also just take a few minutes to sit down with my good friend, Father Colin Parrish, to talk a little bit about what resonated with us, what affirmed us in the conversation, maybe also a little bit about what challenges Father Parrish, or maybe what challenged me, but really from a place of really trying to identify the good, the true, and the beautiful in that person's life, or where their experiences overlap with our own. So it's a little bit more about what we took away from their experiences than it is anything, about them specifically that we might want to say. So, Father Parrish, what jumped out at you from the conversation? Where are you at with all that?
Yeah, as I was listening to Emily's conversation with you, I really loved that the story about her going to the Waffle House.
Yeah.
And
God in the grease.
God, right? In the grease. And I just really, that resonates with me and on many levels, which I'll go into here and affirm that. And it also challenged me because as she's speaking about it, she's bringing up this reality in me of my own heart of, I was challenged because I recognized the way that you were asking questions was different how I would ask questions. Right.
How so?
I was recognizing that I would instinctually, I would have wanted to ask her, well, if it was so beautiful, why would you leave it? Da 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 da. Right. Now that's not exactly, that's a loaded question.
Yeah.
Number one.
Yeah.
But number two, but that it's coming from a place of my own heart of like a challenge, right? Like there's something in there and I'm not able to name it yet. Right. That was challenging to me. And I appreciated her speaking with that kind of honesty because it was a chance for that to come out of me.
Yeah. I live in a place a lot of times right now and kind of what I call the goodness of being, right? And I think it's something that, like, what is Kate, our friend Kate Hazen, what does she have tattooed on the inside of her arm? It's something very similar to that. She's got, like, reality is
beautiful tattooed mm-hmm. on the inside of her arm, right? The goodness of being, reality of being beautiful, just basically like right now, this moment, or what's gone before, is a reality we kind of have to accept. And because it is what actually happened, there is a goodness and a beauty in that, no matter how fragmented it might be, which kind of lets me kind of sidestep a lot of my, oh man, I wish she would have stayed. Well, she didn't, right? Like, so what's the goodness of the reality that she encountered, mm-hmm. rather than kind of sitting around and saying, well, what if you had, right? What if you had stayed? What if you had done this? That's something that I think is really challenging, and that I've only really gotten more comfortable with the last couple of years. I mean, I do sometimes wonder, you know, why people choose to move rather than stay when they find themselves in a situation that they find satisfied. You know?
Yeah. The thing was that what she was saying was beautiful, and it challenged something in me. And I think that thing in me is something that is part of my own journey, right? Yeah. That I have to uncover. And so the whole reason of me bringing that question up, right, on the podcast is just by way of saying I'm thankful that her person brought that up.
Yeah.
In other words.
Yeah.
But the things that I actually really found beautiful was that her prayer for the way she's describing her prayer of wanting the God of the universe to show up, mm-hmm. was just marvelously authentic, and I think really that kind of language is refreshing, and just the. And with the intensity that she, because you could hear it in her, voice, this intensity for that.
Yeah.
And, you know, wanting God to, you know, she say, like, I need God in the flesh to show up in the flesh.
Right.
I don't need an abstract
idea
or notion.
Did you ever have like a middle of the night yell at the sky, like moment, at least one, or did you ever? Like, because when we're younger, God is always up, right? Like, that's what we think God is. It kind of reminded me of the non-teenage angsty version of that, mm-hmm. right? Like, this desire to say, you know, like, where are you? Like, show up, be present, you know?
And I think that's like just the, you know, if I'm going to use religious language, you know, my Christian language for it, you know, that's the kind of Jeremiah moment of you poisonous brook. You know, I need you to pay up.
Right.
I need you to pay up. And I think that's just lovely that she has her own way of expressing that.
Yeah.
So that was really, I think that's something that really resonated with me personally.
Cool. If you had something you wanted to say to, Emily, like, basically having listened to it. Oh, do you have something?
Yeah, I have more. I mean,
oh no, go ahead.
No, I mean, I was deeply challenged by this conversation just because I perceive Emily to be someone that I would interact with on a usual basis here in Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
But there, as I was, I had to listen to this three times. Basically, I've listened to this three times over the course of a week and a half, and. Just more and more recognizing, like, I see a lot of commonality and points of connection with Emily, just coming from my own experience. For example, her talking about going to Iowa City and being, you know, being in this new culture, right? And being like, whoa, this is really different. And then coming back and she say, going back to, she said Dallas, I think, moving back there, saying like, now I have to be in relationship with people that I disagree with. Right. Well, I can totally understand that coming from my own circumstance of being, for all intents and purposes, a devout Catholic in a predominantly non-Christian Seattle. Right. And that's a real question of my own heart, too, that I live. And so I was like, wow, maybe I found a fellow wayfarer in that, in that kind of questioning. Lastly, I just really wanted to like kind of mention about the beauty of her moment when she had found MS and she found out she had MS, multiple sclerosis. She was lying in bed, debilitated, with all these fears going on in her head about her husband will leave her, da 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 da. I mean, just the yeah, I mean, this deep darkness that she was living in that moment, having a child that she, you know, I mean, you know, she has a new kid, you know, I mean, still, that's horrible, right? I just thought that her, that kind of moment of this voice saying to her, everything's going to be okay, I will take care of you, is just so not usual, right? So not what people would normally think would happen in that kind of experience. You know, it's easy to crash in that kind of experience and continue to spiral. And yet there's this voice of a presence of love that said that to her. And she, as she put it, she believed it. And, you know, she had this trust in something that she can only understand partway. She had.
Yeah. And that's, I think at its core, something that I really am excited about exploring in any of these conversations. Like, that's really the point at which faith takes hold. And it doesn't really matter from a human perspective, whether that's faith in God, whether that's faith in a person, whether that's faith in an idea. There's this point at which people are making a leap, mm-hmm. right? There's this point at which people are having an encounter that's transformational for them in some way and are taking a leap and changing their life based on that. Like, that's the essence of faith and belief. It's actually what separates it from knowledge, right?
Knowledge, like, and ideology, or ideology for that matter.
Right, right. And so I think that's what's really interesting for me. When I was younger, I really felt like I knew there was a God. I really didn't experience any sort of significant doubt about a divine presence, right? Like, whether it was, you know, Yahweh, you know, the God of Isaac and the God of Abraham, you know, whether it was Jesus Christ. I don't know that I was entirely sure, but the concept of there being a divine was something that I never doubted. And so it really seemed always interesting to me that that was something that people questioned, and it was something my parents questioned, my siblings questioned. I was weird. I get it. But it was actually like when I grew to have actual adult doubts was a really affirming place for me, because it was actually where my faith started to take root more deeply. But when I was listening to Brett kind of share about that, it really did seem not just, yeah, her name is Emily, but like everybody. I could be wrong there, but I feel like people who have messaged me have referred to her as Brit, are some of our common friends. And so if it's not, I'm just making that up.
Mea culpa, so, my friend, mea culpa. Yeah.
And so the reality is, as I was listening to her kind of share that point, this real sense of her kind of seeking her own value, being found in this place where a lot of people would kind of give up on their validity of personhood, right?
Yeah.
Like, they would give up on, like, now I have MS, now I have this debilitating disease, I've struggled with identity, I've struggled with value. That, I feel like, would be a place a lot of people would just be done.
Yeah.
And for her, that was a place at which she not only found value for herself through this moment of encounter, but actually has been led in this path of really desiring for others to know that they have value also.
So, and that was the other point of connection for me. I don't know if you were intuiting it, but was the fact that in my own life, you know, the reason why that one of the most marvelous things for me about my Christian experience was when I, you know, became Catholic, you know, had this relationship with, you know, in Emily, in Brit's terms, you know, this God of the universe. You know, when that happened, I understood myself. Mm-hmm. I understood that I had value.
Right. Right.
And that I just wanted people to experience that bad. And so, I mean, to see that in somebody else is beautiful.
So we're getting near the end of the time that we kind of have allotted for this. If you had one thing, having listened to Emily's, interview, that you wanted to say to her, maybe it's reading between the lines, maybe it's, you know, something you just want to say to affirm her experience, or something that you took away from that, what would you want her to hear from that?
I would just want to affirm the kind of steel that I hear in her experience, in her soul, whatever, a kind of a steely experience that she is drawing from, that regardless of the fear or those nagging voices that she may experience throughout her any given day that she has about her worth or about the usefulness of reality, whatever, right? That I just want to affirm the fact that she's following something true when she's looking for this kind of growth, you know, this kind of way of being with people that she expressed earlier. And that's really following something, just in my experience, something true with the beautiful.
I would really just want her to hear, and I think she has a couple different ways, but just one more time, like, that she has worth, right? Like, mm-hmm. That she has worth and value, and that she is worthy. I feel like a lot of the time she was really struggling with whether her doubt, you know, validates her experience of faith. And I, like, and that could be me, like, projecting totally, because that was one of my things. But I think that that's actually one of the things that gives the most validity to it, is this kind of perseverance in this place of unknowing. And so, yeah, just this fact that she has worth, that she has value. Those are things that I would want her to hear. I mean, and so.
All right, everybody, that's it for this week's episode. Next week, we'll be sitting down in our new audio setup with Sam Sorich from Glass Darkly and Spirit Juice Films to talk about his faith journey and a new project he's working on called 8 Beats. Can't wait to talk to you then. Until then, get out an FNF ability and talk about what really matters.